Coffee with Cudmore.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM. WVTL.
We're on the line with the chief, Thomas Brownell, chief of police in Amsterdam. Good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Bob?
Okay. You'll wake up tomorrow morning. You'll still be the chief. The next morning...
I will actually technically be the chief till midnight Saturday.
I know. That's quite a change. How's that going to change your life?
I wish I knew for sure. I know that I'm going to have a lot less stress. Well, just looking around my office today, I mean, I never did have the most organized office, and now it looks like a bomb went off in here. So I've got a couple of days to clean everything out.
I see.
After that, it's pretty much up for grabs.
Now, I actually probably should ask you this question, but it occurred to me today, the Gazette ran a story, maybe the Recorder has as well, about the people who want to succeed you, and they're all members or four members of the Amsterdam Police Department who are going to take the civil service exam and so on, yada, yada. But it's only people in the local police department who would be eligible for this?
Yes. It's a promotional exam under civil service.
Ah.
And a promotional exam, by definition, means you're being promoted from within the department.
So
if it were being opened up to outside people, it would be called open competitive.
So somebody must have decided to do it that way. Would that have been the mayor, Mayor Anthony?
The local civil service board makes pretty much all the decisions. I'm sure she probably had some input.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it only makes sense. You don't usually see open competitive exams unless there's a department in turmoil.
Yes, for example, in Schenectady, didn't they do that?
Well, I don't want to point fingers, but that might be an idea, you know.
Yes, indeed.
Usually if you have a well-organized police department and there's no blatant investigations from outside federal agencies, anything like that, you're always going to see a promoter from within. It just makes sense, and it's good for morale.
Mm-hmm. And you were appointed not by the current mayor, not by the previous mayor, but the mayor before that. I mean, that's a long time. John Ducheci named you.
Duke Ducheci, yep. On January 1st, 1996, provisionally, I was appointed. And that means providing I passed the civil service exam, which was given in March of that year.
Oh, I see. So he appointed you first, then you had to take the exam.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation to be in.
I know.
Because, actually, I've been a provisional patrolman, sergeant, and chief.
Huh.
Each time I got an appointment, it seemed like there was no list established, so I had to then go in and score in the top three to keep my job.
Well, obviously, he really wanted you for this job. I probably should ask him why, but you were credited with restoring more stability or safety to the city of Amsterdam. In particular, would you say, in going after drug dealers?
Well, when I became chief, the drugs had just reached... I think it's safe to say epidemic proportions here. I mean, we had kids getting off of their school bus on East Main Street, and they were walking by a drug dealer sitting in lounge chairs, and just people just pulling up and making their buys and driving away. It was a pretty sad state of affairs. And the thing with drugs and drug addiction is the crime always follows the drugs. I mean, they're just inexplicably linked forever. Last statistic I saw was 84%. 84% of all crime can be related to drug abuse.
And
so if you can't ignore that, you know, if someone has a $200 a day heroin habit and they're not working for NASA, which they're probably not, they're going to be looking to commit crimes to feed their habit.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember those days. I used to come into the East End probably a lot more than I do now because I was going to see relatives and so forth. And that was my father anyway, his old neighborhood. And you used to be the beat cop there. I remember didn't they call one of the traffic lights there the carjacking light or something like that?
Well, what it was is it was right in front of the old Joe's Market down there. Was it Joe's?
Lou's
Market.
Lou's.
And if you're a woman late at night or any time, really, but mainly at night, and you get stuck at that traffic light, the last thing you want is people walking up to you, knocking on your windows, trying to sell you drugs. Mm. And that was, I don't think I ever gave a traffic ticket to anyone who didn't stop for that light, if it was, you know, in those circumstances. But it was a bad reflection on us that something like that existed here.
You were born in Amsterdam.
Yes. Born here. I went to a one-room schoolhouse out in Cranes Hollow. and eventually moved to some really fancy old school on the old East Main Street just outside the city that actually had flush toilets, so that was a big deal for me.
Yeah.
You know, no more outhouses and having to have water brought in. But then my father got transferred with General Electric, as many did, from Schenectady to San Jose, California. So that's basically where I grew up.
And that's where you first became a police officer.
Right, that was out in San Jose. That's where I had my college years, and I guess it was the call of the hometown.
Well, I was going to stop on that for a moment because, you know, I'm sure others have pointed this out to you, that in general, the trend in America is to move west, and you move west, but then you move back.
I think I was the only U-Haul going east when I came back in 74.
Why?
I just think I had the call of the hometown. You know, it was your roots. You know, it was certainly a much less hectic lifestyle here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, San Jose had a million people at the time. And it was a great place to grow up. It really was in the 60s. It was the place to be. I mean, they're still writing books and doing movies on California in the 60s. But when it came time to, I don't know if you could use the word relax, but I just really felt that Amsterdam was always, it always was my hometown, and maybe I could do something here.
But you come back to relax, and you got this drug problem staring you in the face, and you're the cop on the beat.
Well, yeah, when I first joined the police department, you know, I've made a mistake because I was just going through my desk the other day and realized I always tell people when I first joined my salary was $7,200 a year, but that's not true. I first joined as a special patrolman, and I believe I was making $100 a week.
Well,
so that's more like $5,200 a year.
Wow.
But, you know, I had law enforcement in my blood. I just couldn't think of anything else to do that would...
How did that
enjoyable?
How did that happen? You said your father works for GE, and I mean,
I was a pre-veterinary major in college out in California, and I was a pretty mediocre veterinary student. I didn't really like biology; wasn't crazy about chemistry. But I happened to have a friend, a girlfriend, whose two brothers were police officers, one in San Jose and one in Santa Clara, which is right adjacent to it. And I went to pick her up one night for a date, and the two brothers were talking about 459s and 415s, and I said, yeah, sounds kind of interesting. And the one brother from San Jose says, well, why don't you come out with me tomorrow night? He says, and you can ride with me.
Yeah.
Because even back then they had a civilian ride-along program.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, yeah, that'd be nice, you know. And I remember the girlfriend saying, well, I thought we had a date tomorrow night. I said, look, I can go out with you anytime. I said, why don't we go out with your brother tomorrow night?
It
was a Saturday night. And I changed my major Monday morning.
Wow. I just can't imagine it. You know, I'm sort of a skittish individual, as you may have heard. And it's a dangerous work.
You take your first ride in a police car, it either terrifies you or excites you or a combination of many things. But the one thing it did to me was it told me this is what I want to do.
Really?
This is a non-boring job. It maybe have its times of boredom, but you always know that the unknown is right around the corner.
Thomas Brownell is with us. He's Amsterdam police chief, talking about his life, his career. He will retire after work on tomorrow. He's in office, really, until midnight tomorrow night. I must say, I even mentioned this on the show yesterday. I don't know if anybody brought this up to you. But the recorder did a very nice piece with you yesterday. But
yes,
I love
it.
I love the pictures. Because there's this picture of you in the 1970s.
I think you see the California influence there in my haircut.
As a cop, and you look like Cheech Marin or somebody with the hair just stuffed under your hat.
I got to tell you, since the day I walked in the door, I had long hair, and it always irritated the higher-ups. And when I made chief, I went to the PBA. I said, listen, I said, you guys can wear your hair as long as you want. They all shave their heads. Because, you know, the style had passed me over.
Yeah, nobody.
And so the new style was shaving your head. I says, you know, you guys look like the Hitler Youth. I says, yeah, I always was the opinion that you should look like the people that you serve. And when the cops had really short hair back in the 60s and 70s, and everybody else in the world had long hair, you didn't look like you were part of the community.
Hmm.
So that was one of my big drum beats that, you know, we should reflect the people that we protect and serve. And if you come out and you've got a butch haircut and everybody else you're dealing with has long hair, they don't automatically, they don't identify with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes your job tougher to try to explain to them that, yes, you know, you are one of them. Because hairstyle back then was a big factor.
Yeah, well,
you know,
it was.
Like, yeah, the President of the United States complaining about long hairs, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and that's true. It really was somehow more of an issue than maybe than it is now. Well, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Yeah, not a lot less now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many bizarre things kids do nowadays that, you know, wearing your hair long is no longer a big deal.
That's the advice you're in raising children. Oh, don't sweat the hair for, you know, wait till they're,
right.
you know,
right.
so well. So they put an earring in their ear, fine, as long as they keep it out of the nose, you know,
yep.
big deal.
But if you're going to put a bone in your nose now, you know.
Whatever you do, you can do it. Again, you've had a lengthy career. Are you going to write a book or something? I'm just curious, what are some
no,
of the...
No, you know what? I wish that I had kept a journal. And I mean, I'm just shy of 13,000 days as an Amsterdam police officer. And if I had kept a journal every night when I went to work, you know, just jotted down a few things that happened, I would really like to relive those things. Because now you just don't remember them all.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that they're lost. And every once in a while, an old partner of mine will show up and he'll say, oh, remember that call? And I go, you know, Dan, that was a great call, you know, but I forgot all about it.
Do you have
it? You know, all your partners are dying, you know, so.
No, amen to that. I shouldn't say amen to that, but I know what you mean, I guess is what I'm saying. Do you have any advice for the new chief?
Well, if I knew who it was, I would say, it's going to be somebody that I know very well.
Yeah.
So any advice I'm going to give him is probably something I've already brought up at a staff meeting, because we do have frequent staff meetings of everyone from sergeant and above. Mm-hmm. So they've known my style and my management style for a long time. I think one of my strong suits, if you want to say it, is I'm always open to suggestions. Just because I'm the chief, and I don't care if a patrolman walks in the door and you've been here 3 days. If he has an idea, has merit, I'm going to incorporate it. I'm at least going to research it.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt that just because, you know, age doesn't necessarily beget wisdom. Mm-hmm. It does beget experience. So there's something to be said for it. But when you're working in an organization of 40 police officers, even if a citizen comes up to me and many times would and say, well, what do you think of this idea? You got to be open to that. Because everybody's got, you know, you never know where the best idea is going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily going to come from a book or come from you just because you're the chief of police.
Well, it's certainly...
So I think that would be my mantra. I would say, listen to everybody, be open to all possibilities.
And I mean this as a compliment, but in some ways you don't, you know, if you meet you, you don't seem like a chief of police somehow. Or,
you know, and I'm kind of, I've always been kind of glad because of that. Because when I was coming up, the chiefs were always very stern.
Yeah, you don't remind me of J. Edgar Hoover, you know, or anything like that. You know, it's like
You know, if you don't, well, maybe it's my California upbringing. You know, I'm certainly more laid back than most of the people that work for me. But if you don't try to at least relax and see some humor in many things.
And there's the point.
Out there.
You're known for being humorous, and that, in fact, did not get you in some difficulties.
Right, and it makes the job not just more interesting. I mean, if you can go into a really tense situation, like a domestic, and diffuse it with humor rather than a nightstick, you're way ahead of the game. And so was everybody else concerned in the event.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just a matter of honing your communication skills. I mean, sure, we train officers to use tasers and guns and nightsticks and defensive tactics, but I also like to train them to use their verbal skills.
Yep. And you know,
because that's going to get you out of a lot more problems than your nightstick will.
In terms of, I guess I would say, your humanity, the one thing that I remember, and it wasn't an interview done by somebody else, but you were talking about how difficult, and I forget what the exact issue was, but it might have been about drunken driving or driving while drugged or something like that. And you said the worst things that you remember was, you know, ringing somebody's doorbell because one of their offspring had died and you had to go in and sit down.
That is far and away the worst call any police officer has. And what makes it more galling, I'm a big first of all, I think every DWI is a potential murderer. So, I don't care if you're a police officer, I don't care if you're the governor of New York State. You get stopped for DWI, you need to be arrested. and that's just common sense, and that's the way things should be. But the other thing I'm really big on is wearing seatbelts. I think if anyone is a parent or a grandparent and doesn't drill that into their children and grandchildren, then that's just a shame. It's a shame because many, many of the death notifications I've been on, well, I would say all the death notifications I've been on, you know, there was an old saying, I've never unbuckled a dead man. And I never have. Any fatal accident I ever investigated, either the person went through the windshield or out the side door or under the dash. And when you go to make that death notification, in the back of your mind you're thinking, and you know, ma'am or sir, if your son or daughter had been wearing a seatbelt, I wouldn't be standing here. You'd be getting a call from them saying, come and pick me up because the tow truck's taking my car. And what a difference in your life that would make. So I'm very, very big on, I mean, when my kids were growing up, I couldn't back the car out of the garage to warm the car up without my seatbelt on, or they'd let me know it. And that's the way I wanted them to be. And I wish I could tell people, just from a police officer's perspective, please don't put us in that position of having to ring your doorbell at 3 in the morning, and you know why we're there. Your son or daughter isn't home, and there's only one reason we're going to be there, and the best you're hoping for is that we're going to say, look, your son or daughter's in the hospital. I'll give you a ride down. But unfortunately, it doesn't always come out like that. It's always more like you have to sit down. I have something to tell you. And when the police officer knows that a seatbelt would have made all the difference in this call, it makes it all more difficult.
Chief Thomas Brownell, I thank you for joining us. Tomorrow, the last day until midnight tomorrow night. Do you go to the Common Council again for their next gathering or something? I thought, or do you?
That's the rumor.
I see.
And I guess they'll let me know.
You'll be their special guest and so forth. Any other? I mean, I presume you will say another interesting thing about you. Well, I mean, I'm sure other chiefs of police do, and probably maybe they all do. But you're very active in the Rotary Club.
Yes, I'm currently the president of the Amsterdam Rotary. It's a wonderful organization, so I've been a member of that, I believe, since I've been chief of police, or shortly after that.
So I imagine you'll continue with that. You at least got one place to go once a week.
Absolutely. In fact, I wore my dress uniform when I chaired the meeting yesterday, and I said, everybody goes, why are you wearing your dress uniform? Because I very rarely wear it, you know.
Right.
I said, well, this is the last meeting that's going to be chaired by the Amsterdam Chief of Police. I said, next week I might be in my pajamas, but for today, I'll wear my best uniform.
Well, again, Thomas Brownell, congratulations on a long career in law enforcement. The best to you in the future.
Well, Bob, I can't leave without saying this. What makes us a successful police department are the people in Amsterdam. I can't say enough about how much cooperation we get from the people we serve. It's really a combined effort. It makes the city as safe as it is, especially compared to other capital region areas.
Well, again, thank you, Chief, and good luck in your retirement.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Came back to his hometown, Chief Brownell. 924, Jason Aiello, Karen Chase have news at 930.
For the new light, 104.7 and 1570 AM.
Here's the boss.
I was 8 years old.